Hello and welcome to the Business Innovation Show, where we talk with innovators, startup founders, angels, venture capitalists, incubators, project managers, and even scientists on their journey to create great products. Here's your host, Anirban Biswas.
Hi, this is Anirban Biswas. Those who don't know me, I work with initial stage startups who are looking for product validation and help them reach market fit and strategize for future growth. Today, we are going to talk about leadership, the main ingredient that can make or break in the business. Leaders help themselves and others to do the right things. They set direction, build an inspiring vision, and create something new. Leadership is about mapping out where you need to go to win as a team or an organization, and it's dynamic, exciting, and of course, inspiring. And to talk on leadership today, I have Naftali Hoff with me. Naftali is an author, speaker, leadership coach, and president of Impactful Coaching and Consulting. Welcome to my show, Naftali.
Thank you, Anirban. It's really a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, great to have you here. Listeners, I must say, Naftali has an awesome podcast called Lead to Succeed. Every leader, aspiring leader, must go and listen to it. You can go to impactfulcoaching.com for Naftali's podcast. So I'm actually hooked onto your podcast, Naftali.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I love podcasting. I love guesting as well as hosting, and I'm certainly excited to be guesting with you today.
Great. So, Naftali, as this show is focused around startups and new businesses, let's start the discussion about leadership in startups. So I have experienced mainly two types of CEOs. Ones who have leave their job because they're sick of it and envision starting something new, and those who are with a MBA degree who want to build their own startup right after college. So therefore, many startup CEOs struggle with people centricity and what it really takes to orchestrate a team. Leadership is not taught in these areas, and many times the chemistry just doesn't exist within the team itself. So what's your take about leadership in startups?
Yeah, so there's a lot to unpack, I think, with the question. Just for my own clarification, so we're talking about really two different options here. In the former case, if I got the scenario right, and you're talking about somebody who's leaving corporate and they want to start something new, yes. So, truthfully, in both scenarios, it sounds like they're probably starting with a small team, probably Absolutely. Not by themselves, but they've just got a handful of people that they're trying to build a prototype or some kind of product around, and they've got their initial seed funding. They have a little bit of runway, and they're trying to find the right balance between, developing the team, building the team, as well as building and focusing on the product, the research, the development, etc. And so typically speaking, I would say that leadership is an evolving process for them. But the one thing that I think is really critical, and this goes beyond, I think, the scope of your question, really in terms of leaders in all spaces, and that is that we need to think about leadership a little bit differently. And I guess this is where I was hedging a little bit between the two scenarios, because in the first case, if the person has leadership experience, hopefully they know this already, though we can't take that as a given. In the latter case, they probably don't have this experience at all because they're really new to leadership as a concept and probably new to business in many ways if they're coming straight out of school. But either way, they have to think about leadership as more about we rather than me. Meaning when a person is growing, developing as they are increasing their skill set, and frankly, they want to get noticed by people within the organization and beyond. In school, for sure, it's this way. The focus is all about getting yourself personally and individually recognized for your knowledge, for your skills, for your work ethic, and all of these kinds of things. Focus on me, 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 not because I want to be purely selfish, but just because I recognize that if I'm not self-promoting on some level, it's going to be really difficult for me to take the next step, which is what everybody really wants to do. So whether we do this overtly or just sort of, in the back of our mind, promoting ourselves and getting ahead takes top priority for many people. But as a leader, as you need to really think very differently, because no matter how personally good you are at what you do, if you don't have the ability to transfer knowledge, to empower people, to create a culture and an environment where those around you feel not only recognized and supported, but they feel like they have space by which to make contributions, to frankly to make mistakes and learn from those mistakes and improve upon them over time, then you're really going to have a hard time growing any company, any team, any organization. So I think it's critical for people who are starting out in leadership or just starting a new company or new project that they really take time to think about, what does the group around me need from me, not only in terms of vision and accountability, but also in terms of creating the culture that would allow folks to grow, and where is the greatest return on investment? Is it in building myself and my own skills, or is it primarily in empowering those around me, focusing less on being the technician at this point and focusing more instead on the business leader, the team leader, the entrepreneur?
Right, right. Setting up the culture seems to be really, really important from the beginning.
Oh, for sure it is. And what's going to happen over time is that as you're going to grow, hopefully any new startup leader would experience initial successes. They have their seed funding, so they have a certain runway in which they can get their work done. But then they have to demonstrate that they have real, future, that the startup really has the potential to grow further and to get that second round of funding, which is going to put them squarely on the map. And as they're doing that, they want to be building their team simultaneously. And people, especially our millennials or younger workers, but I think it's true across the board, people want to work for organizations where they're going to be doing more than just working and getting a paycheck. You know, they want to believe in the mission, in the concept that's being created. What is it that we're doing to improve humanity, improve business, improve, individuals' lives? And we want to work in a culture that's going to value us for who we are. It's going to take into consideration perhaps our individual needs, perhaps in terms of where we work from, when we work, how we work, these kinds of things. And of course, every situation is going to look a little bit different. But as people are looking into the firm, into the company, the organization, and they're asking themselves, is this a place I want to work? Obviously, they're going to be looking at the people already there, and they're going to be talking to them, and they're going to be asking those kinds of questions. Mm-hmm. So if you're successful in building that kind of prototype on a smaller scale, as you scale up and out, you'll have an easier time, number one, replicating it, and number two, convincing new people that this is a place for them and a place where they will feel comfortable and want to really give their all to help you grow and succeed.
Great. Yeah, of course, yes. Now, let's talk about your book, Becoming the New Boss. I guess that's targeted towards the new business and startup owners.
It's in a nutshell. Yeah, I mean, it goes beyond startups. It's really for anyone who's new to leadership, either literally new, like for the first time, sort of your second scenario from the previous question, mm-hmm. or somebody who is transitioning within, either moving up within a company or maybe relocating to a different firm, but you're starting new with new people in that scenario. And the backstory of the book is my own experience, which I talk about in the introduction, my experience, which was from the side of school leadership, how I transitioned from one position to another, some of the challenges and complications that I encountered. And frankly, this is the kind of book that I would have benefited from tremendously had it been written for me. And had I known about it and read it and internalized it, it would have contained a lot of wisdom that would have helped me significantly to avoid some of the challenges that I encountered / created, and empowered me to make better decisions all along the way. Experience in many cases is just the outgrowth of making mistakes, but it's also the outgrowth of getting other people's wisdom. So I talk, for example, about mentoring in the book. Mm-hmm. And why it's important to get a mentor, what to look for in a mentor. I talk about building equity with your people and trying your best to really understand them and to earn, let's call it, some small wins and some credit, get some wind behind your sails before you start on a more ambitious type of, whether it's change management or anything that typically will require people to to really get on board with you and to really change the way that they've been doing things. That's not the kind of thing you want to be doing on day one, unless you're dealing with a turnaround situation. That's a little bit different. But in most cases, so it's about, you know, how do you establish those first 90, 100 days? How do you hit the ground running? How do you build equity? And how do you kind of position yourself for the long haul? And I think that people who are thinking about it, it's like the short-term strategies, but to be able to play the long game. You know, leadership is really about the long game. If your company is going to be successful, you're going to have to be at it for a long time. And, absolutely, you know, laying the foundation at the beginning and doing it right is going to be a huge determinant ultimately about the viability of your business moving forward.
Great. I'm looking forward to the book to read soon. Okay. Every time, you know, I talk to the different business leaders and ask the one most important quality of a leader, I get the answers like listening, integrity, humility, etc. So what's most important in your opinion and why?
So I do agree with listening. I think that's really important. We can listen in different kinds of ways, but I think it needs to be an active listening. In other words, people need to really know that our focus is on them. And I talk about this in the book as well. You know, some of it is verbal, but a lot of it is really nonverbal. It's how we sit. And every culture is going to be a little bit different in terms of our body posture. It's where our eyes are. It's in repeating back what we heard and asking, did I get it right? Is this what you're saying? And it's also in creating opportunities for people, for not only for us to listen, but for our people to express themselves. You know, in many cases, the issue is not that we're bad leaders, or bad listeners, I should say. The issue is that we don't create enough opportunity for communication and dialogue to occur. And people feel that the leader is either too busy or not interested or whatever it is. So it doesn't mean necessarily that as you scale, you could be having one-to-one conversations with every person, you know, in the company all the time. But I think if you're strategic about it and you create that as part of your culture and everybody recognizes that input and ideas are valued, that ultimately is going to create a proper flow of information, and it's going to help people get behind the leader. And that's really, really important. You know, getting people to feel that the leader has their best interests in mind. And even therefore, when leaders make mistakes, and everybody does, as we talked about before, what's the reaction now going to be from the rank and file when those mistakes occur, or when people frankly just don't agree with you? It doesn't have to be a mistake, but they could have a difference of opinion. If fundamentally your relationship is in a good place, you've built the equity, you've been a good listener, people feel respected and valued, then they're going to be much more forgiving for things that they don't agree with or flat out are errors than if you don't have that level of trust and you don't have that connection.
Right. Now, the exact opposite question, what one trait do you feel is the most detrimental to a leader?
So I think going back to what we talked about before, you know, leaders who think that they are the be all and end all. And sometimes that's the case because leaders are typically chosen or self-select because of their excellence in what they've done. Right? Most people, I mean, some people could be completely disconnected between their abilities and what they're trying to accomplish. But in most cases, I would think that if somebody feels that they are capable of getting a startup, for example, off the ground, and they're able to convince other people to invest in them, that's a serious level of support. That's a serious level of what's the word I'm looking for, that people genuinely trust that they have the ability to deliver on what they say they can. So they're thinking about, well, how great am I? You know, I've got this unbelievable idea, and I've got the funding behind it, and I have these years of success. And so they sort of, you know, they believe their own press, and they start to say, well, you know, I can do it all. And, you know, as we talked about before, great leaders need to be able to empower others. They need to be able to stand a little bit above the fray, thinking out to the future as well as in the present, not get too stuck in the day-to-day so that they can continue to create the environment and the vision for the future. So if they're trying to get it all done because they believe that they're the best, they don't delegate, they don't properly assign work to others, they don't empower those people, that's where I find that people typically get stuck and create some of the problems that they have a hard time undoing.
Right. I'm going back to your another book, The Epic Solution to Small Business Understaffing.
Sure.
Think, you know, it's amazing. You know, I read that book. Now, could you please describe that epic method that you talk about?
Sure. Yeah. So that's, this is an ebook, and this can be downloaded for free from my website. Yeah. So Epic, I actually have two versions of it available. One of them is for small business owners / entrepreneurs, and one of them is for nonprofit leaders. But the essence of each one is the same. Epic is just an acronym for four steps that a person who is dealing with understaffing can use in order to get the most out of their people. And this, of course, assumes that you can't just hire more people, because obviously if it's a matter of I need 10 people, so to speak, to get a job done, and I only have 5 or 6 on staff right now, the most logical next step is to go out and hire some new people. But assuming for the moment that you don't have the resources or the bandwidth at the moment to get that done, and you're trying to get the most out of the people that you have, or maybe your work tends to be a little bit more seasonal and it's hard for you to bring people on and then not to have, you know, what to do with them at a later point, how do you manage through those crests, if you will, and the higher levels of demand and not burn your people out? You know, that's ultimately the goal of the ebook, is to try to create a solution to that. And EPIC stands for Expect, Pull Together, Influence, and Communicate. And Expect has to do with setting targets, goal setting, right? Really helping everybody focus on what are we trying to accomplish, who's responsible for what, how will success be measured, you know, these kinds of, let's call it, metrics-based, performance-based goals. Pulling together relates to improving the quality, if you will, of your team. You know, sometimes when we are understaffed, people kind of will go off into their respective corners and focus on their work and try to avoid getting pulled into other things where they're going to have to work even harder. But I think the leader really needs to focus a lot on keeping everybody together, you know, in terms of their work, in terms of just the camaraderie of the team. So whether it's through team building or other exercises, or just keeping everybody, you know, constantly communicated to and on board with what's happening and how people different ways are making different types of positive contributions, that's going to pull the team together, create more chemistry, create more camaraderie and collaboration. And collaboration, we know that teamwork can be exponential. So 1 + 1 does not necessarily equal 2. It can equal 3 or more if people are really pulling together and using their respective talents and insights to advance the agenda. Influence is mainly focused on the leader, but how do I become more influential? In many cases, understanding what I do well, what I don't do so well, whether it's through a 360 or some other type of assessment, to better understand how I can be more influential and a stronger leader for my team. And then finally, communicate, which is pretty much, you know, straightforward, right? Be clear, be open, listen actively, as we talked about before. If a leader does all four of those things, or the ones that are most necessary for his or her specific situation, they will typically find, I don't have specific, you know, numbers to share with you at the moment, but I think they will find the morale will increase, that people will feel better about what they do, they'll be happier, come to work with more energy. And more will get done. Mm-hmm. More will get done. It may not solve the problem completely, because at the end of the day, you know, more people typically will produce more outcome. But it definitely will be a lot more effective than just trying to let things stay as they are and hope for the best.
Great. Now let's go back to the age-old question. I'm sure people have asked you this question many times before, but I still guess it holds some value. Are the leaders born or are they made?
I think it's a combination of the two. Mm-hmm. But if I had to choose between the two, I think that the answer would be made. Mm-hmm. And whether that's self-made or whether that's made through learning and observation. Right. And immersion in those types of environments. Like, mm-hmm. you if a person has what we may call very limited leadership capacity, I would say that no matter how much immersion they're exposed to, they're going to be limited in how much of an impact they can have on others. But I do think it's important to point out that leaders really fit many, many different types of profiles. You know, oftentimes we think of leaders as being you know, strong personalities, super charismatic, great communicators, kind of like the Hollywood version of leadership. Mm-hmm. But many people who are successful, if you read, for example, Jim Collins' Good to Great, yeah. and he talks about the level five leaders, absolutely. those people are not necessarily great leaders in the way that you would typically define it. They're not extroverted. They're not running around, you know, playing up the media. They're not just these kinds of people who are you know, quick on the move, so to speak, with great humor and great quotes and all that kind of thing. Not super motivating, like they would get in front of a camera and just be able to wow you with their presentation. Right. They could be humble, introverted, self-effacing, but they know how to position the right people in the right way. They know how to stay in control of themselves and the people that they are, that they're leading and simultaneously serving. And I would bet, if I could ask them, I would bet that they probably got that from people that they observed. You know, sometimes it might be second nature, something that they were born with, but I bet that they probably saw that in others and they were able to use that for their own success as well as the success of their companies.
Absolutely. What advice would you give to someone looking to pursue a leadership role?
Some of it we talked about already. You know, mindset mm-hmm. is an important piece of it. Getting a mentor, I think, is really important as well. Another thing that I may have mentioned, but if I did only in passing, would be to really try to understand the history and the culture of an organization that you're looking at. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I guess it depends. In reality, I think it's going to depend a little bit on where in the process this person is. So if that person is just thinking about leadership, then of course they want to, you know, do some type of learning, kind of get themselves prepared, but they also want to take on leadership opportunities in their current work environment so that they can point to things during interviews and during conversations and feel better, frankly, in terms of their own confidence that I can do this because I've done it on a smaller scale maybe, but I've done it. If, on the other hand, they're already beyond that and now they're kind of looking for a specific opportunities and they're looking at two or three different options, for example, or even if they've already been hired, but they want now to really be successful, get to know the historians of a particular company, get to know more about the culture. What are the little things sometimes that are big things? You know, you think it's small, but other people think it's huge. And that's often true in longstanding companies where culture is really a big deal. It's often the case with organizations such as schools and institutions of learning where they've always done certain things in a particular kind of way. Where they revere certain individuals or certain symbols, etc. And if you walk in and just kind of turn things on its head because you don't value that, then you're going to lose people's trust right away.
Absolutely. So coming back to the startup space, as an organization gets larger from a tiny startup, there can be a tendency for the institution to dampen the inspiration, quote unquote. So how do you keep this from happening?
I think a lot of it has to do with just resetting the vision. You know, at the very beginning, it's super exciting when you're starting something new, assuming for the moment that you believe in it and everyone else believes in it as well. And of course, it's new, it's different. We all respond well to something new if we feel that it's going to help us or allow us to help others. But the question is, how do you maintain that enthusiasm after time? And I think that comes back to connecting people with why you got this thing started to begin with. Understand your why, right? The concept that Simon Sinek has popularized, and keep that front top of mind. Another thing that I think is really valuable is to help connect your people with the end users. In other words, who are the beneficiaries of what we're doing and how are they benefiting? So, for example, if you're creating machinery, right, who's using that machinery and how is it helping them? How is it helping them work more safely? How is it helping them produce more rapidly? How is it helping their bottom line? How is it helping the true end user of that product or service? And the more that you can connect your people with stories, right, and help them realize that this is not just a job, but this is a job that is making a difference, that in many ways I would think is going to be very, very powerful.
Great. Another last question for today. What would be your suggestion for the future entrepreneurs, startup owners, or who are dreaming big? You know?
So I'm trying to when you say that they're dreaming big, clarify for me specifically what you mean.
So whenever a startup comes up and they think of, you know, we will be launching a product which will be hit overnight, people will be start paying for it, and VCs will come and investors will fund them in $1 million, and finally they will exit. You know, finally they will exit to a $1 billion region probably.
Yeah. So I think you probably have to maintain a balance between like your head in the sky and your feet on the ground.
Right.
In other words, I think it's important to dream big. You know, nothing great has ever happened with small vision. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if you're not grounded in reality, in many cases, you're really setting yourself up for failure. I mean, I don't have the statistic in front of me. You probably
right.
do
right.
In terms of, you know, the success rate of startups and all of that. But it's not as high as we often think. You know, we read about the successes. We're enamored by them. We're like, you know, all of their incredible achievements and their income rate, you know, and revenues and all of this. But the reality is, for every one successful company, there are many that fail. And sure. So going back to what we talked about before, you know, talking to people who've been down that road, getting a lot, you know, doing your homework, really understanding what are the realities on the ground and what's the worst case scenario and how do I position myself and my company for times that are a little bit more lean so that we can get through them and continue to build momentum. I think if right. you go into it with, you know, asking on the front end, asking people, is this an idea? Would you be interested in such a product? Would this solve a problem for you? What kind of problem would it solve? You know, really understanding the demand on one end. And then on the other end, ensuring that you are, even if people say, yes, I would do it and I would buy it, maybe you could pre-sell, maybe you could do other things to ensure that you're getting actual money behind it, not just people saying, nice, nice, good idea, but they're putting their money where their mouth is. And at the same time, talking to people who've been down that road to ask them what have been their challenges and what unanticipated things occurred to them that in retrospect would have caused them to act or think or plan differently. And if you really do your homework, in most cases, you can anticipate most of the challenges you may encounter, and then as a result, be better prepared for them if in fact they do happen.
Right. That's it. I think this is a great talk with you, Naftali, and I'm sure people will be really, really find it helpful to them. Thank you. Thanks a bunch for coming to the show, Naftali.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, and I look forward to hopefully opportunities to continue to engage with your audience.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Business Innovation Show. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Be sure to visit www.anirbanbiswas.com for more on business and innovation. And don't forget to join us next week for another episode. Thank you for tuning in.